Welcome back to Switchcast Live. I'm your host, Doug Tabbitt, and Switchcast is the automotive-related podcast where we are searching for the truth and the humor in the car industry. And I say automotive-related, sometimes we get a little bit off-topic. It might be tangentially related, but as long as we can tie whatever we're talking about to cars, and it's interesting, we'll talk about it. Interesting is debatable, depending on who's the judge of it, but we think it's interesting, and we're doing our best to make it interesting to you. And that's why we have a variety of topics all across the automotive industry. How government is affecting it, scams, lawsuits, all sorts of crazy stuff. We don't want to have a podcast just for car nerds. We want to have an interesting show for anyone that drives or owns a car. So with me tonight is my co-host, Tyler Sanders. I'm not sure if you can see him on the live stream, but you can hear him.
I got to move back my laptop screen a little bit. It's creeping into the shot. Ethan's going to fire me.
People on the audio podcast don't know what they're missing by not watching live, but they aren't missing Tyler because they get all of him.
Yep. This is all anybody gets. Soak it up.
Speaking of watching live, if you are here live, feel free to throw your questions and or comments in the flow of where you're watching. And if they're great questions, we might get to them on the podcast. If they're bad questions, you might get roasted in the comment section by other listeners, which is always fun.
Or us, let's be honest.
Or us. So try your best. I have to maybe post a redaction, not post, but speak a redaction into existence. Last week, and I swear this podcast is not a documentary or docuseries on the rise and fall and rise and maybe fall of Carvana, but by golly, it is such an interesting topic and things keep happening that make it interesting. So last week, I did give a prop of the week to Carvana for the first time ever allegedly turning a legitimate net profit for first quarter of 2024. Like, they actually made money on cars, and they made enough money that they still made money after paying off all their debt payments and stuff like that for the quarter.
Every time I see the number of total debt that they have, I'm shocked. I don't ever get used to seeing it. It is just such
an astonishing... Is it still $6 billion or
is it
more?
It's like $5.3 billion or something now. It's staggering.
So I may have to walk back on that a little bit. Which, you know, I've walked back on Carvana a lot because I said they're going bankrupt and they went from $4 a share to $104. But, you know, just a little bit wrong. Although there's a lot of people who are speculating that their earnings are not legitimate. And certainly we unpacked that last year because we talked about how they used approximately $1 billion of debt restructuring and called that income, which they have to report it as income, but basically said, oh, yeah, look at this. We made a huge profit. Well, no, you didn't. You didn't actually make money. You just moved money around and reported it as profit. There is a lot of people in the car industry and otherwise speculating that the first quarter profit numbers are completely falsified for Carvana.
No.
The basis behind this mostly is the fact that they reported a over $6,000 gross per unit. So essentially, like, hey, we bought a car for $15,000 and we sold it for $21,000. That's our average flip. And everybody in the car business is going, huh, what? Because that's like double the industry standard. CarMax, who's the number one automotive retailer in the country, if not the world, does not post those numbers. And in fact, if you look back at Carvana's quarterly profits 2 years ago, 3 years ago in first quarter 2021, I got to slow down here. I'm tripping over myself. First quarter 2021, they posted about a $3,000 gross per unit on average, which if anyone in the car business or not in the car business remembers 2021, you could not lose money on a car. You were printing money on cars in 2021. Nobody's ever made as much money as they have in 2021, and some of us never will. So to say that Carvana magically doubled their gross from like the best harvest in the history of the car industry is highly suspect right off the bat. But there's people alleging way bigger things, that they're completely fudging their numbers through other types of investments, that they're claiming profit on the unit, that they're essentially claiming the entire interest on the loans that they're selling or writing, that they're showing that as profit. So basically recording future profit, or if they're selling off their loans to another bank, like, oh, well, that's our gross per unit, which isn't technically accurate unless you can keep repeating that. There's people alleging that they wrote down a ton of inventory in fourth quarter of 2024 so that they could show a huge profit in the first quarter. There's other things they could do if they are trying to boost their profits to boost their stock price, which we'll get to that in a second. An age-old trick in the car industry, if you want to show a bunch of profit, say you're a used car buyer that gets paid on gross and you're not going to be around long, is just overvalue the crap on trades. So your current gross is great, and then you stick the dealer with a bunch of trades that they're buried in and walk away. So Carvana could be doing that. They could be paying buku bucks for trades so that their front end gross is huge for the cars they're selling, but then they're going to take a loss later. Now, why would they do that? If they're legitimately trying to shore up the company and make it great? Well, everybody in Carvana, for the most part, all the high level people have been selling stock in the last year. There have only been two recorded purchase transactions from executives in Carvana buying their stock. But over $68 million in stock sales just since April this year from insiders in the company, plus many, many more transactions, tens of thousands of shares, I believe, in one report I read, in the last year. So it's very highly coincidental and suspect that Carvana's executives and insiders are selling off shares like crazy as their stock is going up. Because think about it, if you really believed in the company, if you're like, man, we are executing this turnaround, we are going to make a buttload of money, why in the world would you sell off stock in your own company if you really believed it? The old saying, put your money where your mouth is.
I saw a number of, since December of 2022, I think that there's a bunch of news sites that said this, that there has been $11 billion gained in stock growth for the CEO and his father combined.
Right.
That's since December 2022, so it's not just the beginning of this year, but that is a staggering amount of money, and it's awfully coincidental for a lot of things.
It's certainly motivation to want to cheat.
Yes.
If there is cheating happening.
I also saw in a couple of articles that some analysts, which I don't know if this is like, if you don't need any like credentials to be an analyst, I don't think, maybe you do, are saying the stock should be valued closer to around $90 at the moment, which is like a 20% difference to its current value.
Sure. Yeah. I read somewhere else that they thought it was a $26 value.
Oh, my.
But wow. Nate Anderson on X, I don't know who he is, but people keep reposting this. He correctly identified what we called out last year, is that their net income for last year would have been negative other than the $700 million corporate debt exchange. But he says that their first quarter 2024 net income also would have been negative, but for a gain on fair value of warrants, which I texted my financial analyst friend and I said, hey, can you, because I looked this up and it's all SEC documents and crazy high level language. And so I texted him and said, can you explain this as if you were explaining it to Michael Scott? And he did his best. And essentially it's kind of like futures, right? It's your agreeing to sell a stock to somebody at a certain price at any given time. But usually it's recorded as a liability, because if your stock goes up, then you're in the negative. You owe them money. So I don't know what these warrants are that they had agreed to and why their stock going up would make them income. But that has been stated, that those gains are part of their net income, and they're basically taking their entire net income and then backing it up and saying, this is our gross per unit, which is not necessarily correct. Oof. They're not actually saying we're buying a car for 15 and selling it for 21. They're putting it all in one pot and saying, this is our income on everything, and then dividing it by the number of cars sold and saying, this is our gross, which is really, really dangerous if you have like a sales and a service business and a hot dog shop, and you're like, man, we made a lot of hot money on hot dog. Well, no, we didn't. We made a lot of money on cars. Let's put the hot dog money on the cars.
Like, I'm not an accountant, but this seems like a convenient way to look at numbers to me.
Yeah.
I'm also just glad, like, I don't know anything about, I'm not like in the business like you are. I follow cars as an enthusiast, but like, I kind of looked at the $6,000 GPU and I was like, that seems a bit high. Like, just by gut feel, I was like, that's a lot of money.
Especially for the dollar value that they're selling.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, what is it?
$20,000 cars. That's
a substantial percent.
That's pretty good. And especially when everybody knows Carvana for paying over retail for cars. Everybody at the auction is like, what is Carvana doing? They're just bidding the crap out of stuff and overpaying. Now, they're not doing it as badly as they used to. So we haven't lost a bid to Carvana in probably 2 years. 2021, it was like every time we heard Carvana, we're just like, just take their offer. We can't touch it. Now, that's not the case. I think they've gotten more conservative, but they're still paying top dollar for stuff. So if you want to sell your car, go to Carvana, I guess, and hope the check clears. But the other thing, and maybe this is me oversimplifying it, but these debt, not the debt, the stock warrants, right? So let's say they had a gain on warrants. So they had made a deal and they agreed to buy them at a certain price, and you know, they got them, and then those stocks went up, and so that's counted as their gain. It's like circular math, right? So if you're not making money on your actual product, but you're making money that is related to your stock going up because of these warrants, and then when you report the income that's related to your stock going up, your stock goes up more because you made money. Like, to me, that's just kind of a shell game.
I think that might be the point. Like, it seems weird, but the thing is that all of this is like a lot of different, like, we talked about like the GameStop and AMC stocks, and those are going bananas. So if you got in late, like, somebody's already left with the bag, you're just the one filling it for them, essentially. I think at this point, like, by the time they make the numbers go up to enough point, or to a point, they cash out, and then somebody else is left holding the bag.
Yeah, it's like, to me, going back to the office, it's like when they recorded the sale on the website and in person, right? They're counting the profit twice.
Oh, yeah.
I made money because the stock went up. We're going to count that as company profit, and then the stock will go up. So we'll count that as company profit. So the stock will go up, and then that's company profit. But it's like, that's not revenue. That's not... Okay, moving on.
But Doug, the number is going up. That's all that matters, right? They can report big number at end of quarter.
It might be time to short Carvana again. I am going to be right at the end of the day that they are a house of cards. I'm going to be right someday.
You will be right, but all three of us have lost like three opportunities to make a crap load of money on Carvana.
Yeah, shut it. Okay.
Ethan could have had a cross cab by now.
correct me if I'm wrong on Carvana, but they can do that, right? They can report their earnings the way that they have.
Yes.
Right. It might be questionable, but it's not like by the book definition misleading the shareholders, because they're not doing anything illegal.
Right. But there are a lot of allegations that there's something else going on because of the background of the CEO and his previous somewhat sketchy dealings.
But assuming that's neither here nor there, taking that out of the equation, it's unfortunate and especially for companies doing business at the scale that Carvana is, but there's nothing, I guess, illegal by the book.
System is broken.
Sure.
Ethan is, he's going places. He's going to make a lot of money one day with this attitude. Easy now. He's like, it's not illegal.
All right. Well, transitioning before we go to a commercial, Ferrari has come out with a new car. Can you guess what powertrain it has?
It's a V12, isn't it?
Yeah, how did you know?
Well, because I heard. I mean, I pay attention to this stuff, Doug. I couldn't tell you what it's called.
Yeah, you couldn't?
No, no.
It's called the 12-cylindry.
Oh, is that seriously what it's called? Oh, my gosh.
I mean, it's a good thing it's not an EV. But
what is it? Oh, my God. That is actually what it... That is the stupidest name.
Well, Ferrari has a history of bad names, right? This is coming from a company who named a car super fast. Ferrari the Ferrari. Redhead.
What was Redhead?
Testarossa. I mean, it sounds good, but it's like, you know... If you wanted like a really slow car that had lots of problems, like a Peugeot should have been called like Blue Hair, because it's like your grandma, right? Just
well, and they called their SUV the Puro Sangue or whatever the heck. What does that even mean?
Another thing that Ferrari did, they produced a car named after Ferrari's 50th anniversary that began production on their 48th anniversary.
Nice. Well, they're just getting ready.
Yeah. So they've never been fantastic with the monikers.
Well, and they also named a car after their founder. And then when you say the car name, it's the founder's name backwards.
Right. I mean, that's kind of cool. But anyway, they've had some good names, though. Daytona and California, Moda.
It wasn't actually called the Daytona, though, was it?
No, actually, that was a nickname. GTB. You're right. Yes, yeah. It got the nickname because of its success at Daytona. Hmm. So maybe it wasn't even Ferrari that had the good names. It was Luigi Chinetti.
Switchcast is brought to you by Boxcast. Boxcast is a live streaming company based in Cleveland, Ohio, and they serve broadcasters and viewers around the world. Their founders launched Boxcast back in 2013 with a single purpose, to make people a part of the experience. So if you're looking to live stream your podcast, church service, car show, sporting event, wedding, or even your cannonball attempt, Boxcast is an easy and flexible live streaming platform for organizations. Boxcast is so easy, in fact, that we're broadcasting this show with a phone. So head on over to switchcars.com/Boxcast for your free trial. It looks like hey Hank, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I got this new beer here.
Ooh,
yeah, limited edition Conservative Dad's Revenge. 100% American beer.
Oh my goodness.
10% of sales will be donated to the Georgia GOP Legal Defense Fund.
Oh my.
To defend Georgia's Trump electors against unjust political prosecution.
It looks like there's a face on that. Is there a... What's going on? Is it got a...
It's Donald Trump.
Oh, is that his mugshot?
President Donald Trump. Yep.
Fantastic.
Former president. And future president.
All righty. So it's been a few weeks since we've seen you,
Hank.
Yeah,
pretty good, too.
Oh, does it taste like beer?
Tastes like freedom.
Oh, heck yeah. That's what I like to hear. I have to get me some of that.
Fancy brown stuff you're drinking.
Hank, this is better.
Goodness.
I'm sorry.
Like the gasoline I put in my Corvette.
This stuff came from Scotland. Do you not like things from Scotland?
Well, I think my wife's family was from there a few generations back, but
so they do all right.
Yep.
Nice. Alrighty, Hank. Well, tonight I wanted to talk with you about some statistics that I've seen about convertibles.
Okay.
All right. So,
My convertible? Did you find out it really was a one of one?
I did not. I'm talking about other convertibles.
Okay.
Other more different ones. So it turns out that convertibles are declining in popularity.
Oh, that's too bad.
You've got the must. So I've got some statistics from 2001 to 2023. So last year, in 2001, the Ford Mustang sold 36,000 convertibles. Last year, they sold 4,600.
Well, that's a good thing. Those things are pieces of junk anyway.
What about the Chrysler Sebring? They don't even
make
it anymore.
That's even worse. That might be the worst car they ever made.
I honestly think you're right. Mitsubishi Eclipse. Don't even make it anymore. Mercedes-Benz SL. They sold about 11,000 in 2001. 3,000 last year.
Yeah, well, you know,
there's less and less rich people now with all the inflation that's happened, so they probably can't afford them fancy cars as much.
Yeah, that's got to be it. Chevrolet Corvette. Ooh, here we go.
Oh, yeah.
They sold 12,600 in 2001 and 14,000 last year.
Hey, look at that. Cheers to Corvette.
So the number went up.
Oh, people love Corvettes. Proof that they're the best car in America.
So, Hank, if they're selling more Corvette convertibles, that makes it less likely that they're rare, right? The rarity goes down as they make more.
Well, my car is a one of one.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they made less when your car was made than they did last
year.
That's
right.
You got that going for you.
They only made 348 of my color in 1998.
Oh, that's getting a little specific, don't you think?
Well, yeah.
So
how many did they make of your car?
Oh, I have no idea. I can't get the numbers for that. I got a 1994 Porsche 968 that they made 17 of in that color combination.
17?
That's really rare. It's got a gray interior. It's fantastic.
Well, I think 17. Wow, shoot. That might almost be as rare as a Corvette pace car.
Almost. So speaking of Corvette pace car, they've announced, I think just today, the latest Indy 500 pace car.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a Corvette.
Oh, perfect.
It's the E-Ray, the hybrid, with all-wheel drive and electric motors.
Something's wrong with the organization there. They must be trying to get their carbon credits or something.
So would you rather...
You know, pandering to the environmentalists.
Hank, would you rather drive
next
this?
Thing you know, they're going to be friggin' racing electronic race cars around there, too.
They do already
that
have...
That e-racing series or yeah. whatever it is. Silly. Ain't no noise. Just electric motors.
So,
what
Hank,
is America coming to?
You know, I wish I knew. Alrighty. Well, thank you for hanging out with us tonight, Hank. Everybody, that was the Corvette Curmudgeon brought to you unwittingly by the
You know what? I think if you made Trump president again, then you might have gasoline Corvettes pacing the Indy 500.
I wonder if he'll put that in his campaign
promise.
Well, thanks for coming by again, Hank. We'll see you next week.
Sure. Thank you.
Alrighty. Again, that was Hank the Corvette Curmudgeon brought to you unwittingly by the Corvette Buy Sell Trade Group on Facebook, your source for cranky boomers, overpriced Corvettes, and reinforced stereotypes. Goodness, Hank was on a tear tonight.
You know, he hadn't been here for a few weeks. I think he had a lot to say.
Ex-Pogo Sam says Hank damn near had a stroke.
Well, he found out that your Porsche color was more rare than his Corvette.
I think it's that beer. We can't let Hank have beer on the show anymore. Especially if it's so-called freedom beer.
Oh, man.
Oh, boy. All right, Doug, welcome back.
Speaking of politics, since Hank started us. No, it's car-related. It's car-related. We're going to gloss over this, but we might get in a little bit of trouble. In the news this week, there's a $180 million parking garage being built for Columbus Airport's new terminal. Now, I thought that was just a lot of money for a concrete parking garage.
The article that I saw was really talking about the McDonald's they're going to bulldoze to build it too, which I thought was wild.
I don't know why that's relevant.
It was in multiple places.
Open one across the street. There probably is one.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah, but doing the math, and again, I don't have experience building parking garages, but it's 5,000 spaces with 100 EV chargers. So that comes out to about $36,000 per space. Now, if you charge, say, $20 a day per space and assume that it's full all the time and that's your net profit on it, it would take about 5 years to ROI each space, which honestly isn't that bad when you think about it. But let's be honest, they're not going to net that. They're going to have operating expenses and they're not going to be at 100% capacity or anywhere near that all the time. So it'll probably take 10, 15, 20 years to ROI those spots, which is not a very good ROI.
Yikes.
But where we get into the political stuff is the contract was awarded based on companies who promote diversity and equity. So that's government for you. They didn't award it based on quality and economy. Like, hey, can, like, you know, if that company is all about diversity and equity, and they're going to do the best job and warranty their work, and their bid came in competitively, that'd be one thing. But what I want to know is, like, was there a $120 million bid from a company that wasn't their, like, preferred profile of people?
Interesting. I also wonder that, you know, obviously Columbus is the capital of the state. Lots of people in there, but they're spending a lot of money on this new airport with which the car parking garage is going to be attached to.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's for the new fabs, Intel, like the chip manufacturing facilities are going to be making, but those got pushed back a year because they haven't got funding from the government that they were promised.
So, but these are private companies. Like, it's
weird.
It goes back somewhat to the early days of interstate highways. The Lincoln Highway was a big back and forth between Henry Ford and some other automotive magnates and the government, because the automotive companies were profiting big time off of highways being built, but they didn't want to pay for them. They wanted the government to pay for them because, oh, well, this is good for the country. This is progress. This is linking states and whatever. So I think Henry Ford pledged like $1 million or something like that, but the government paid for most of these highways to be built. And if you really think about it, you go, oh, yeah, like maybe the automotive companies should have paid for the highways.
So was it Lincoln after the former president or Lincoln after the car?
After the former president.
Okay, that's a little convenient.
Yeah. Lincoln. Was Lincoln named after the president? Did he found that company? I read on Wikipedia that he did. Right after where I read that you can believe everything you read on the internet. By Abraham Lincoln himself. He said that.
He was a very knowledgeable man, I tell you.
He was very knowledgeable about the internet, yes. Speaking of car dealers, we're not speaking of car dealers, but that's what I had in my script.
What a transition.
Yeah. Really good at those.
We can blame that on Ethan. He didn't set us up correctly for that.
Just blame everything on him.
Exactly. He's the producer.
You might as well have just said, speaking of Abraham Lincoln, and then just going into something completely different.
So there's kind of a news saying going around the internet. That's what I should have said. Speaking of things you read on the internet, there's a saying that you're dumb if you buy an EV. That's true. But the saying is more than that. It's that you're dumb if you buy one. You should lease it. Why should you lease it?
Oh, like all the benefits and such. We've talked about it. Didn't we talk about that last week?
Because of the extreme depreciation.
Oh, yeah.
You shouldn't buy one because you're going to get your butt handed to you on depreciation. You should lease it. But like most TikTok financial advice, that breaks down really quickly because that is only a hack. It's only true if the manufacturer grossly miscalculates the residual value. Otherwise, like the manufacturers aren't stupid. They know generally how much their cars are going to go down in value. They have actuarial tables and they have highly paid CFOs and people to calculate these things and create their leases that know a lot more about automotive depreciation than the average consumer walking into a car dealer thinking that they're going to, you know, get one over. It's like going to a casino and thinking you're going to win, right? The house always wins. The car dealer, the car manufacturers, that house always wins. So essentially you're paying for that depreciation anyway. You're just agreeing to pay for it up front and at a very high interest rate. Statistically, leasing a car is the most expensive way to buy a car, period. But the people saying this are not wrong about the absolutely abysmal depreciation on EVs. And I'm not sure if the manufacturers can even keep up with calculating residual value with, at least in the last year, with how fast the price cuts are coming. Recently, a dealer valued a Mercedes EV for potential trade-in at literally half the payoff. So the customer owed $142,000 and they bid it at $70,000 for trade.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Ooh. And this is not an isolated incident. Like, this is happening. However, Polestar did just come out with a ridiculous lease. It is $300 a month with $3,000 down. And there's some, you know, disclaimer, not including taxes and fees and blah, 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 on approved credit. Whatever. It's not my lease. I'm not advertising. I'm just saying these are the numbers that were quoted. Or it's just $1,000 down if you're a Costco member, because they give you another $2,000 to kick in. So it is true that every now and then a manufacturer will create a lease in order to move units that beats all math and can actually be a great deal. The problem is that the average consumer thinks every lease is some amazing life hack and every lease is that, and it's not. They're not. They just aren't. Most leases are bad deals. They're very, very expensive, and you get out of it, you have no equity, you turn it back in, and you get stuck in this endless cycle of leasing cars, which is just a very, very expensive way to own cars, because every 3 years, you're losing half the value in your car and you're paying 10%+ interest on that in order to lease it.
Oh, but I don't have to worry about maintenance and depreciation.
No, because you just agreed to get the colonoscopy right off the bat.
You can get
trying to think of a polite way to say that.
I'm on Auto Trader right now. You can get like a 20 or 21 Taycan Turbo for like $90,000. Weren't those like 170 to 200 new?
Yes.
Look, I love the car hobby, but I could not stomach that. It's not that good of a, it cannot be that good of a driving experience to stomach that level of depreciation.
Speaking of depreciation, let's go to the Scaminator.
Yes. Oop, oop.
After a commercial. Because it's that time.
Switchcast is brought to you by Celebrity Machines. Celebrity Machines offers more than 250 different screen-accurate license plates as they've appeared in movies and TV shows such as Back to the Future, Ghostbusters, The Fast and the Furious, Breaking Bad, and so many more. Celebrity Machines also makes our dealer insert plates, as well as our commemorative 2539 plates from the fastest cannonball run ever. Visit CelebrityMachines.com for more info and use promo code SWITCHCAST to save 25.39% at checkout.
Scaminator is where we look at listings or messages or whatever and try to figure out how quickly if they're scams or what the scam is. So hit me with it.
Yes. So we're talking about a 2002 C5 Corvette 6-speed, full option base model. I think those are kind of conflicting.
There's very few options you can get on a base model C5, but anyway.
Heads-up display, transparent roof, ride control, sport seats, etc.
Does it have Z51? Oh, it doesn't, because it has ride control.
Yeah, I'm going to take
your word for it. Magnetic ride and Z51 suspension.
Gotcha. Could you get magnetic ride in a C5?
Yes.
Nice. This has 225,000 miles.
Wow.
Yikes. Rebuilt title. With a title issue, 3 exclamation points.
Other than the rebuilt title?
I guess so.
Okay.
Ooh, coming up next. Title was signed in the buyer's section by previous owner who is not cooperating. I've already spoken.
Okay, so the seller signed in the buyer's section.
Yes.
By not the person who currently has the car.
Title was signed in the buyer. Yeah, interesting.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. I've already spoke with a BMV investigator who says that the prosecutor would not be interested in a case on a vehicle that I purchased 3 years ago.
The prosecutor also wouldn't be interested in a case that isn't criminal. He signed he made a mistake and signed it wrong. I'm sorry. Also, a 2002 C5 Corvette with 200,000 miles and a rebuilt title is definitely a small claims matter, because there's no way that thing is worth more than like $5,000 anyway.
Like, God, on a good day.
All right, keep going.
The BMV investigator says they'd have to go through a court-ordered title process.
Okay.
This will take a couple $100.
Oh, no.
And you must go to court.
It's almost what the cars were. We're
getting there. And tell them why they should issue the BMV to print off a new title in your name.
Oh, he's telling the new buyer this is what you have to do. He's not even willing to do this.
Exactly. The next sentence, I have the one and only good title to this car with no liens or loans, damages, or mistakes.
What?
No mistakes.
No. No, it's not good, and there's a mistake.
But it is signed by somebody else, is the next line in the listing. With that being said, the car is rough around the edges, has been wrecked, but it is my daily driver and it does run like a scolded dog.
How does he daily drive it?
Probably
Wait, did
illegal.
You say a scolded dog? A
scolded dog.
I mean, that's probably accurate for a salvage title car. Probably walks a little bit sideways and has its head down.
This car sounds good and pulls hard. If you don't bring five figures...
To the right or the left?
If you don't bring five figures, then I won't sell it. That's all there is to it. So $10,000 or nothing. Firm, no trades.
Oh, man.
I should also tell you, Doug, that this has at least two different sets of wheels. It has an entirely different color front end on it, and it looks like the paint or the wrap is fading, chipping, whatever, on the side skirt.
Oh, man.
And it has a... awful, like, escort style wing. Not two levels, but it's like kind of that. I don't know. It's weird.
Sometimes a car doesn't have to crash to be an accident.
Do you think I'd fit in?
The guy could part it out and make more money. Like, there's a lot of things you can do to get a legitimate title. I love the fact that he's just saying, like, here's all the things the next buyer can do after I unload my problem on you.
Yeah, the other guy should take care of it.
Oh, man.
Wonderful. Do you think if I took this down to the Corvette Museum for their event later this year that I'd fit in? Think I'd have a good time?
I want to know how he's been daily driving it if he doesn't have a legitimate title, because he obviously doesn't have legitimate plates.
He's been this way for 3 years.
Is he, like, stealing used temp tags off of Nissan Altimas that are reusing them? And goodness gracious. I got nothing more on that one.
Goodness.
Next up is the Wall of Shame. The Wall of Shame takes different forms, but usually it is the kind of reverse Google review or the reverse feedback where dealers can make fun of customers and shame them for just being absolutely disconnected from reality, we'll say. But we have another one that's a little bit different. First, this was just somebody who left a note on a car that was pretty ridiculous, and a little bit of background, right? So people from Maine have a nickname for people from Massachusetts, and it's one of them is Flatlander, one of them is just from away, another one is tourist, but in general, the nickname is Masshole. And people from other states might call them that as well, but people from Maine like a slower way of life, and so when all the uptight, wealthy Massachusetts people come into Maine and, you know, turn things upside down in the summer, that kind of rubs the Maine natives the wrong way, so they've invented this nickname. So Maine does also not have a filter process or an approval process for their license plates, so you can get whatever you want. And one guy in an Audi has a Maine plate, Masshole, and he got this wonderful note on his car. Take it away, Tyler.
Yes. Real quick, if you want to see some of the crazy stuff in Maine, this is not a plug or sponsored, although I guess it could be. Vanity of Maine on Instagram is
great,
fantastic.
Site.
Such
not
a good
appropriate,
follow.
But fantastic. So
good. All right. This letter left on the Audi. Go home, hater, in like size 72 font, bold underlined. With the world already as awful as it has become for our children, you would think that we would do everything within our control as proud New Englanders to curb the hate. We are appalled by your car and ask that you never return to our neighborhood. It sickens us to think that we have people like you not only travel to our town, but also drive around with such a license plate so that children and young adults can see it openly. You should be ashamed to call yourself a human being. You are not funny. You are a part of what has become so broken in our world that our children are left to suffer with, thanks in part to you. Whew. Doug struggling a little bit.
It is funny. I think, and I say this as a fellow homeschooler, I think that was a homeschool mom that wrote that note.
Say, there's some white knuckling of the pearls going on here. Like, my goodness, calm down.
That person definitely has plastic over their couch.
Oh, yes. And it's the type of floral that would be on a shirt that I'd wear. It'd be super.
Their husband owns a one-of-one Corvette.
Yes. It's Maine Hank.
All right. Breaking news. I have a wall of shame as well. This is one that I've been wanting to use for a while, but it was so controversial that it had the smoke had to clear, so it didn't get traced back to the dealer that that actually got this inquiry. This is a real inquiry on a real car, and the car is not a Nissan Altima or a Dodge Challenger. You may or may not believe me, but I'm telling the truth. I'm going to read this inquiry verbatim as it came in to a car dealer. Quote, "All right, so look, I don't want to waste yours or mine's. I got 5K to put down. I get a lot of views on TikTok. I can do a promo for you guys, and I can pay $6 to $650 a month. I got 2 good-ass cosigns, my mom and GF girlfriend. And yeah, I was shot in a senseless shooting right before I had my baby, but I was just told I got a chance to walk again. So yeah, I'm finna blow up this. Congrats, GF. Try a C. Like, will y'all work with me? If I work with y'all, no pressure."
Oh, there's a lot to unpack there. Wow.
Or none, or nothing at all.
He's finned to
mark
some,
that
finned
as a
something.
Dead lead.
It's not my fault I got shot.
He might have been in dead lead if he got shot. Oh. The guy had better aim, but.
Yikes. Yikes. My goodness.
I'm just going to leave that one there.
Oh, that was really amazing. Hearing you speak like that, too, was incredible.
I was trying not to do any accent that would make it.
I don't think saying fin to blow up, you can say is like a white guy. It's just.
We're not going to. Anyway, question of the week.
Yes. Question of the week is brought to you by Nuts for Sticks. Nuts for Sticks is a brand celebrating the manual transmission in all its forms. So forget the flappy paddles, we like shifting ourselves. Check out our fun and funny stick-themed shirts at nutsforsticks.com and save 10% on your order using the discount code SWITCHCAST. That is nutsforsticks.com and use code SWITCHCAST. Alrighty, question of the week comes to us on, I think, Instagram.
Yep.
From Robbie V. All right, I got hit on the side of my 996 C4S. Nice. Insurance appraisal said $1,100 worth of damage when I sent pictures and appraisal to the body shop. They said the car may be totaled, oh my, and may need a quarter panel, and I have to go to a certified Porsche repair center because Porsche won't sell them the parts. Just wondering what your thoughts are and if you have any experience with something like this. For those of you listening, the photos of this car that were provided look kind of like they rubbed up against a concrete barrier. Like, it's not, that's maybe even a bit dramatic.
Yeah, like, it's really not bad.
Like, something needs fixed, but all the body panels look fine. They look straight. They look to be in the maybe some paintwork needs to be done with some scuffs and scrapes. The marks are brown. I don't know what they hit or how.
Yeah, this is they
were used to driving a narrow body.
There's a few different ways to unpack this. One, you never take the insurance company's first offer or their first appraisal. Typically, there's a preliminary appraisal that happens that the insurance just sends out some guy that used to work on cars and now does appraisals for a living. But it's kind of like a politician saying they know something about business. They haven't done real business in 20 years and they forget how things work. So it's not to knock insurance appraisers, just like they're not there to actually give you an estimate. They're just doing a preliminary estimate. They're looking at the car and going, huh. So I was involved in an appraisal recently to illustrate this point where the initial insurance appraisal at the wrecking yard was $5,000. Just from a surface level look. And then when the body shop appraised it, it was like $40,000 because they actually got underneath and said, oh, this is bent and there's something wrong with the subframe, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a difference between the initial insurance appraisal and like the real appraisal. And just because the insurance says, oh, it's $1,100 doesn't mean that's all you can get from them. There's supplemental claims. You can say, well, it was 20 grand, but then they found this, so we need another 10 grand. Insurance will also pay supplemental claims. So their first offer is not their final offer. The second point is there's never only two options, right? So this question basically says, like, well, $1,100 or the car might be totaled. There's probably other things in between there, other solutions. It's not either or. Same thing with, I have to go to a certified Porsche repair center. No, you don't. There's used parts. Like, you don't necessarily need a brand new fender on a 996 C4S. Just because Porsche won't sell you the parts doesn't mean you can't get them elsewhere. Porsche won't sell me parts, but I buy them from the Porsche dealer. So what? Right? Like, so there's always other options. You just have to explore those possible other options and not take what's offered to you as this is the only thing. You have to do this. No, I don't. Let's look at what else is on the table. Looking at these photos, it does look like very superficial damage. But $1,100, I don't know where they get that. It costs $1,100 just to paint a friggin' quarter panel and a bumper on a bad day. So yeah,
I'm sure that wheel is going to be expensive.
Right. Yep. So you got to get a new wheel. At the photos don't look like you actually need a quarter panel. It could be like kind of hammered out. And I would certainly want to try to paint it rather than replacing a panel.
Well, because that panel is going to be big, isn't right. it? Because it
not
goes
like a front
up
fender. Front fender, you can just unbolt and bolt on.
Yeah, like
a
this,
rear quarter is.
It's like
all
got
the, way around.
The door frame and stuff in it too. I think.
Yeah, all the way over to the A pillar and the fender underneath the whole deal. There's welding involved, so if it needs to be replaced, it's, you know, it's a lot more than $1,100. Way more, but. If it doesn't need to be replaced, I don't know why you have to go to a certified repair center, because Porsche doesn't need, you don't need Porsche parts if the fender doesn't need to be replaced, and it doesn't look like it does. So I would probably consult another body shop, get a proper estimate, and send that to the insurance company and say, hey, you guys have to pay this. They will, you know, you can fight back with your insurance company. You can push them around a little bit. They just often throw out low offers and people take it, but don't fight back with them. Protect your own interests. Get multiple quotes. Get multiple opinions. Probably definitely go to a different body shop. Should be fine, but that car is not totaled.
Not
I am
close.
Not an insurance appraiser. That car is not totaled.
C4Ss especially. Those are worth some money.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. With that said, let's go to the shrewd negotiator. That is kind of somebody one step prior to the wall of shame. They're trying their best to get a deal, and maybe they know how to do it, but maybe they're trying really, really hard. So what do we got on the shrewd negotiator? Who's trying too hard this week, Tyler?
Okay, so this was sent to us by Alan H. on Facebook. This is not Alan H.'s attempt, but this was a guy named Robert, related to a 2019 McLaren 570S Spyder.
So like a 150-ish, 160K car?
That sounds about right.
Yeah.
Today, this is Robert speaking.
80 grand in a few weeks. McLaren's have worse depreciation than EVs.
Yeah, it's intense. Hi, is this available? Any chance it would take 2,000 for it? My son.
Sorry, I gotta stop you. I feel like that would be a great response. I'm not on dating sites, but I feel like that would be like you could use the same one for like marketplace and dating sites.
Hi,
is this available?
Honestly, that would probably work just about as well as dating apps do anyway. So, no luck.
That should be the default response when you swipe.
Hi,
whatever
is this
way
available?
You swipe that means you're interested. Mark Spence knows. I don't know.
Any chance it would take 2,000 for it? My son and
Wait,
I.
Wait, what?
Yeah, 2,000. That's what's in here.
Okay, 2,000 what? 2,000 Toyota Corollas?
Heck if I know. My son and I have been trying to find something reliable, but to no avail.
So you're asking about a McLaren?
Barking up the wrong tree.
Oh, gosh.
We were expecting to get more money back from taxes, but they ended up taking it for a prior debt, so I kind of got screwed on the deal. I understand this beautiful car is worth more. Just thought I would take a shot. Either way, thank you for your time. This can't be for this car. This has to be for something else.
Listen, it's more polite than people who have offered me more. I got offered $5,000 for a $15,000 car I'm selling, and the guy has been insanely rude about it and creating multiple accounts and bullying me because I won't take the offer. Oh, so nice. The fact that he's offering literally 1% of the asking price and being polite about it is nice. However, as entertaining as this is not uncommon. I feel like somebody saw this once and they've just copy and pasted it and sent it to everybody, because I've also gotten these types of inquiries where somebody just tells a sort of sad story and then offers nothing. But they're like, well, this sob story, will you please? And thank you for your time. I don't mean to waste your time. And it's just like, you're literally control C, control V, control C, control V. And there's tons of people doing this. Like, this is a thing that people do. So it's funny, but anyone that's tried to sell a high-end car on Marketplace probably more than once has come across something like this. So
have you ever
doing this, please stop. It was funny once. It's not funny anymore.
Have you ever gotten like a really low, like this low on something?
Like legitimate?
Sort of.
I don't know, because when they offer me $1,000 for a 150K car, I don't know if they're trying to be funny or not.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
There's a lot of them that try to be funny, and they're like, oh, I'll trade you, you know, 3 chiclets in my tax return. I'm like, what? Like, I got my cat up for grabs.
Wow, cats are priceless, Doug.
Dogs, yes.
Whoa.
Cats do have a lot of platinum in them, though. That's why everybody's stealing them. So, oh. Yeah.
Anywho.
Yeah. I got one for you, though.
Oh,
ready
boy.
For this? Are you ready for this?
I'm as ready as I can be.
Good. Keep getting ready. Are you ready?
It hasn't changed. Still trying.
Oh, yes.
Still buckling up.
You still ready?
Yeah. Oh.
Were you born ready?
I've been tense for a little too long. I'm getting tired. But I definitely wasn't born ready. I was born tired.
It's in here somewhere. Where did it go? Oh, here's one. Here it is. All right. Shrewd negotiator number 2.
Is this one extra? Never mind. Continue.
This is almost as good as the Wall of Shame. Remember a while ago when somebody tried to trade in a lion?
Oh, yes.
Oh.
To that Ford deer, though, that'll take anything.
All right. Reading verbatim. Hey, Bo, listen, cuz I don't got a whole lot of dough to be dough spelled like the deer. Dough to be throwing around. You know, times are hard now, but just hur me out.
I'm her.
Like Ben Hur. He spelled it like Ben Hur. Would you take a trade, bro? Listen, her. I got a tried and true full blooded camel imported straight out of Pakistan.
Camel?
I feel like that camel needs a tattoo that says straight out of Pakistan.
Gives it extra street cred for all the right. Camels here in the U.S.
It's full-blooded with papers, only 2 years old, bro.
What kind of papers do you need with a camel?
Now to sweeten the pot, I'll throw in a box of guitar picks that I was told came from Elvis. Think we can make a deal, bro?
This is wild. What was it for?
I don't know. I think it was a Hellcat or something like that. But here's the thing. Camels, good camels, apparently go for like $60,000 to $80,000. On the open market. So this was a legitimate offer.
Okay, questions. How do you get a pre-purchase inspection on a camel? I would like to know if it's a good one before I plonk down that cash.
I think you look it in the teeth. That's what you do with horses.
Okay.
So
do you do a test to see if it can hold water? Do you like fill it like,
oh, good
like
one.
A pressure test? And then also, if my dude's short on money, where the heck did the camel come from?
Is there a lean on it? How can you tell?
You can probably lean up again. I don't know. It's probably
lean
sturdy.
On a camel is a whole different meaning. It's got bad knees. It leans to the left. No. I mean, does the bank have a note on it?
Does it have it? And it has papers. Is that like a maintenance history? Do you get like vet bills with it or something? Like, how do you know it's been properly cared for?
Are there like, so are the tanks in the camels? Are they baffled?
The tanks.
The water tanks. Or do they like slosh around a lot?
Yeah, so that when
if you take a corner fast.
You don't want that sloshing. Throw off your,
right.
You're probably leaning into the corner a little bit. Give the camel some extra grip.
Right.
So, yeah, these are good questions. There can't be many shops.
Also, is it a dromedary or...
What?
It's the single hump or is it double hump one?
Oh.
That's very important if you're buying a BMW M car, if it's a dromedary or not. You don't want that iDrive. Everybody wants a single hump.
Oh, man. This is wild. You should tell. You should get offered a camel at some point. And you should take it. We can put them out back somewhere.
Yes. I don't know where we go from there. So we're just going to go to the props and flops of the week.
Those are brought to you by Switch Cars. Switch Cars is the enthusiast's dealership where we buy, sell, consign, service, and store only cars that we like ourselves. Check out our handpicked inventory at the shiny, brand spanking new SwitchCars.com. And our pick of the week from Switch Cars inventory is what?
A little bit of a turn, because not only are the props and flops brought to you by Switch Cars, they're brought to you by Neo Classics.
Oh,
soundbite here.
Yeah, can you hit me with some of that?
That wasn't as good because it didn't like glug glug glug. But
move Hank's
anyway,
beer out of
Neo
the way.
Classics. John McDonald brought us some Japanese whiskey. Yeah, some Nika whiskey, some Takatsuru.
Smells delightful.
Yes, it is delightful. And his pick of the week is the 1966 Mustang that we have, Restomod, with a Ford crate motor and Borla 8-stack fuel injection system. I think it's a Tremec 5-speed manual gearbox, maybe a 6.
And
I don't remember
green.
Now. I think it's 5, and it's green.
Green.
Beautiful, beautiful car, no expense spared build. It is pretty stinking awesome. Check that out on switchcars.com. And if you need some cars of a lower quality level than Switch Cars, like our cast-offs, check out Neo Classics.
Ayo.
Yes. Yep. Literally, our cast-offs, the trades that we don't want, go to him. But, you know, there's a niche for everybody.
I thought he was about to come over here and stab one of us. It wasn't me. Thank you for the whiskey.
He has no shame. He can't. He's a car dealer. Our flop of the week is that California. Yeah, that's California in general is a flop of the week. But Carolina Squat Trucks banned in South Carolina. That's right. Do you know, Tyler, do you know what those are?
No, should I look this up?
So it's when you put a lift kit on the front. So it like kind of sort of looks like
this?
A trophy truck, right? Because those have a little bit higher ride height in the front, but that's for a purpose. But there's this fad where people go down the street with giant wheels and this giant lift kit on the front of a truck, but not the back. So like, there's a legitimate safety concern there because you can't friggin' see a darn thing when you're looking at the sky.
This is wild. I'm seeing one now that I love so much because it has the stock wheels on the back and like some hyper huge, like blingy aftermarket ones on the front. It looks ridiculous.
Yes. So South Carolina has had enough of it. They asked people nicely, but now they have passed a law that they are illegal and they're going to start with a $100 fine and then 200 and then 300. And then I think jail time on like the fourth offense or something like that. I don't know, but or an impound. But yeah, so the rule is that the front end cannot be more than 4 inches higher than the rear end, which even that I feel like is, I mean, the fashion police should make a law against that, period.
Yeah,
but like, Carolina is fed up with it. So, yeah.
Interesting.
If you got a Carolina squat truck, go somewhere other than South Carolina and please somewhere other than Ohio also.
Or just fix your truck.
They thought they did.
Negative.
Hey, bro. our prop of the week, Aston Martin, again, I think they were prop recently, but they are making 110 Velours, which is their bespoke V12 front engine supercar with a proper manual gearbox. Yeah, that's right. Aston Martin is leaning into combustion future, and it's beautiful.
Oh, this is like the
incredibly beautiful. However, the pricing starts at $1.5 million.
Oh, my gosh.
Right. They're making 110 of them to celebrate Aston Martin's 110th anniversary. But after you spend the first $1.5 million, the options, of course, just go up from there because it's Aston Martin. And if you go on the configurator site, the word bespoke is... Well, it's not bespoke. The word bespoke is ubiquitous all throughout the website. I think it's just like mentally conditioning you to empty your wallet for all the things that you're going to spend. It's just like putting that word in your brain.
You know how when you go to like websites for liquor companies, you have to enter in your date of birth to get in? Do you have to enter your net worth into this to be able to configure?
I feel like you should have to.
This is such a good looking car though. Oh my goodness. I feel poor just looking at it though. Wow.
I'm the new world of million plus cars is just, it's depressing me. We've talked about this already. We talked about it last week. Like, I understand classic cars going up in value, but every cool thing that comes out, you know, all the roof stuff, like you can't touch for a million, right? Base price might be a million. They won't even tell you what the base price is because they're all sold out anyway. So it doesn't matter. If you even ask, you can't afford it because you're not already a customer in line for it. Todd Hill's 11,000 RPM redline Porsche that they built is in the millions. All of Singer's stuff is up there. You know, all these cool resto mod stuff, any new supercar, like it's just, you got to plunk down a million and a half or 2 million or you can't join the club. And there's so many of them.
I didn't realize those roof anniversaries were $1 million. I'm not surprised.
Like they start there.
Gosh.
And then some. And then some. Anyway, I'm sorry. That was the flop of the week. We're not trying to be depressed. It's just that, you know, it's hard when there's so many great cars and so little money in our bank account. It's just, you know, you can fix that. You can, you know, let's get some socialism going and put money in our account. There's super chats. There's all sorts of things. You can help us buy a Ferrari F50 or an Aston Martin Velour. And
oh, yes.
We'll talk about it on the podcast.
Kenneth Henderson.
We're not going to return the favor, but
in YouTube chat says, wow, 110, almost as rare as Hank's Corvette. Bet you he didn't spend $1 million on that car.
Hank has never spent $1 million on anything cumulatively over the entire course of his life. Yes. Well, thank you all for joining us. If you're in the chats and you got questions, if you've asked them already, stick around. We'll get to them. If you'd like to ask them, stick around. We will get to them. Thank you so much for joining us. For everybody else, thank you for being here. Thank you to my co-host, Tyler Sanders, our sponsors, Boxcast, Switch Cars, Nuts for Sticks, Celebrity Machines, Parallel Printworks, Stephen Holm Woodworking, and tonight, Neo Classics. Thank you to our producer, Ethan Huffnagel. Our bumper music is provided by Emily and Ivory. You can stream the full album on Spotify or SoundCloud, and or you can see them live at Collision Bend Brewery this Friday at 7 p.m. They have fantastic food there, and the music is even better, at least this Friday anyway. This episode will be available next Monday in audio format wherever you listen to audio podcasts. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you in 2 weeks at 8 p.m. as we look forward to edifying, educating, and entertaining you on the drive of your life.